This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Alrighty, third hour here on the show. What's happening? Tiki and Tierney. It's the Tiki and Tierney Show. Last hour of the week. Before we blast you into the weekend, and we're coming to you from our studios here. Modest Teak, I'm going solo today. Tiki's back on Monday. And, of course, our studio is the Rocket Mortgage Studio. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. Good show today. Bouncing around a lot. Hit Luca. Time to stop whining, buddy. Got to grow up a little bit. Great player. But you got to stop getting those tees. And he spoke about that. That was good. Good conversation. Where the Nets are right now as they hit the home stretch of the regular season. First hour. Actually, second hour early. Amy Trask, who was phenomenal. We had a lot of different issues with Amy. Obviously, Rodgers started the show again today. The Astros and what they were subjected to in the Bronx the past couple of days, which is a nice lead into my next guest. Been a little bit since we've had him on the show, but he's always welcome. He knows that. And I just think he's terrific. I think he's smart. I know he's a good guy. Former first-round pick back in the day. I believe it was 10th overall out of St. John's, the big lefty, and played all over the world, literally. Texas Rangers TV analyst, MLB Network radio host, the great CJ Nikowski. Very good on social media, too. What up, Siege? How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, PT. How you been, man? Thank you for the kind words.
Yeah, you know that. Come on, I always gas you up, you know, and sometimes I even mean it, CJ.
I appreciate that.
All right, so a couple of, you know, it's funny. We're going to talk about the history of, like, when we were younger and we're about the same age, we both played baseball. We listened to the same shows when we were younger. Growing up, you know, I was basically in New York City. You were on the outskirts of the suburb. So we both listened to FAN. And Mike and Chris would always talk about, you know, greatest players, especially in baseball. Willie Mays just turned 90. I want to hit you with two historical things. Willie Mays is 90. Now, for my money, right, and obviously you nor I never saw him play, but I believe that, you know, Willie Mays is the greatest all-around player of all time. Babe Ruth, the most iconic player of all time. Where would you agree with that, first of all? And in the overall baseball community, would that get a lot of resistance that Willie Mays, the greatest all-around player of all time?
I don't think it would get much resistance at all. I'm with you on that one. I think after we went through the pandemic and didn't have baseball for a couple of months to start our 2020, which should have been baseball season, we dug into that stuff maybe a little bit more. And I came around. I think I was Babe Ruth for the longest time, and then you have to dig in a little bit more. We're closer at Willie Mays, and I think it's absolutely a fair assessment. I don't think you're going to get very much disagreement as far as him being the best overall player. Babe Ruth obviously has the name, the home run, the recognition. We start digging in a little bit more. And I would say Babe Ruth did a little of both on the pitching side, which helps his case to some degree.
Yep.
But that's even not what we know him for. I would agree with it, and I don't think you're going to get much pushback at all. That Willie Mays is the greatest we've ever seen.
Gotcha. And when you say you did some digging, was it all statistically based, or was it maybe, as I said to Tiki the other day, hey, listen, as great as Ruth was, and, you know, I don't reach for the race card or I don't reach for race unless I think it's pertinent. He only played against white guys. Yeah, I mean, you have to factor that in.
100%. I mean, and it's hard to do it accurately, and it's not to penalize him because it wasn't his fault. Right?
Nope.
It wasn't a decision necessarily that Babe Ruth made, but it's a really fair argument. He wasn't playing in the world, and that's how I think also you can argue about this generation, because the game has gotten so international. Now we're getting the best players from Japan.
They're not always in the peak of their career.
Ichiro obviously was an exception to that. We're getting more and more players coming over from Korea and all different countries around the world. I think that's why we have the best, you know, group of baseball players we've ever had, and that probably needs to be put into perspective as well. But it is a factor, and it shouldn't be ignored.
All right, hey, you know, hey, Diesel, do me a favor. Let's link up again with CJ. Let's disconnect there. Try to get him back up there because I want to make sure we're able to really, you know, hit all these issues. It's a little muffled. I'm sure you guys can tell that on his end. I'm not sure if it's the connection. I'm not sure if he's doing it in the car. I know he's hustling around today, so certainly appreciate him even, you know, carving out some time. But we'll reconnect with CJ in a moment. Yeah, I mean, the Willie Mays thing, you know, it's just the middle of the middle of the outfield, the speed, the power, the flesh, the substance. You know, you want to make the case that certainly Ruth is a pitcher, but he didn't do it long enough. Now, if Babe Ruth was pitching and he pitched for his entire career and he mashed, now there's nothing to be said. I mean, at all. Imagine Shohei Ohtani, you know, leading the league in home runs basically every single year of his career, but also flirting with multiple Cy Youngs and pitching in World Series. I mean, that would be the correlation there. But it's and listen, there's no right or wrong, obviously, but I think Willie Mays, this is a safe play. Diesel, we have him back? He's going to change locations. Okay. Well, Diesel, you're younger, and I'm curious. Who do you think is, if I said, all right, Diesel, bestow upon us your opinion, the greatest baseball player of all time. Before what you've heard me say, and maybe even CJ before, last week if I asked you that, what would you have said?
I mean, I certainly can't argue against Willie Mays. I mean, I haven't seen him play, obviously.
No, I got you.
I mean, Willie Mays is in that conversation. I think Babe Ruth is in that conversation. And I mean, for me, for guys that I've actually seen play and can have a real opinion on, I mean, I would say Ken Griffey Jr. for my money.
Ken Griffey Jr., huh? You know, that's one. If he wasn't hampered with the injuries. He also, I want to double check, but he didn't have a ton of years where Griffey was hitting, you know, 340. You know, again, he had a few outlier seasons like that. Let me just double check this. But, you know, I think one year he hit 350. Let me see. Punch up Griff. Because that's a good one to insert. Because what we do, we have a tendency to romanticize, you know, those from back in the day and kind of gloss over our own. And that's not always right. Let's see. So Griffey Jr., let's see here, 264, 300, 327, 308, 309, 323, 258, 303, 304, 284, 285. Yeah, and then he went to Cincy. The had multiple leg issues, career 284 hitter. I mean, Griff could go get it with anybody. I mean, you didn't see Willie Mays scaling the walls because the outfield configuration was different. But even if Willie had, and they weren't 460 feet away, I can't imagine Willie was scaling walls the way Griffey did. But either way, good name to certainly throw in. And if A-Rod didn't get pinched with the PEDs, A-Rod would be right there. Anyway, CJ, you back up, right, buddy?
I'm back. Yeah, you know, technology these days. I was only on the 18th floor. I feel like my cell phones are working fine from there. But I came upstairs, so hopefully we're good now.
Oh man, I really appreciate the hustle. All right, so it's CJ Nikowski, and he's with us here on the show. So we got the Willie Mays stuff out. I wanted to also ask you about Albert Pujols. By the way, you face Pujols, right?
I may have. You know, it's a good question. I don't have any memories of facing him, so it didn't stick out. I might have got him at the very beginning of his career. I actually don't even remember, which is brutal, and that's part of getting older, which is fun. but I don't have any specific memories of it.
Well, if you don't remember, there's a good chance he didn't take a yard 440 feet. You'd probably remember that. But can you make a case, as I did before? Certainly, Miggy's in the conversation. Manny with the PEDs, it changes. Albert Pujols, the greatest right-handed hitter I've ever seen.
Yeah, no, that we've seen the eyeballs on, I think it's absolutely a fair place to go. And I know people will love to argue, but if you take the PED guys out, and I like to do that because I don't think they deserve to be in the conversation, then you end up with Albert Pujols. It's the MVPs, it's all the times he's been in second and third on top of that. He unfortunately couldn't carry him to the same degree for the 10 years that he spent with the Angels. But we know when we talk Hall of Fame, I'd like to talk peak years, and he's easily a first-out Hall of Famer for me. But those peak years were as good as anybody's and probably the best of that generation, without a doubt.
Let me ask you this, and this, I mean, I know you'll answer because you never avoid anything, but it's probably a little bit of a tricky one for you. In your heart, you've been around the game. I mentioned before when we introduced you, top 10 pick out of St. John's, a lefty. So you got drafted high. You made a few bucks in the draft. You played forever all over the world. You're in the business now for a long time. You know, you've been a very witty and very hands-on social media. Even before Twitter, you were doing blogs. I mean, so you've been connected to the game. I remember those. Those were good. I think you were with the Reds when you were doing – Reds at the Tigers when you were doing those.
Actually, yes, sir.
The Astros, okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So you've been around the game forever. When I mention Albert Pujols, are you convinced that he did all of this clean?
I am. I don't feel like he necessarily. For me, I need a little bit more than just random accusations from a coach, I think, which is what happened with him. I don't want to speculate on guys if it's not warranted.
Right? Yep.
To take anything away from a great player, if there's something warranted that's worth looking at, if there's anything that's concrete outside of sour grapes or somebody trying to ruin a reputation, that's not going to be enough for me.
Yep.
So I have to take him at his word and what we, as far as what we know. And so it's hard because, listen, you want to be a great player, and to me it's almost unfair when you're that level and there's nothing against you yet. That question still is out there. It'll be out there. I don't mind you asking at all because I think it's something that a lot of people wonder about. How could you be that great during that generation and not have cut a corner? But I don't look at him as a guy who did because there's nothing concrete to say that he did.
Smart way to handle it, man. By the way, can he still help somebody? If somebody picks him up, can he be energized and maybe not fourth or fifth, but if you bat him sixth or seventh in the right spot, can he still hit or is it gone?
No, I think he can actually still hit. And if you put him in the right spot now, I don't know if he wants to do that. And that was part of the conversation, whether or not he wants to be a part-time player. We've already seen him this year against the Rangers, and he's just so smart. What's interesting with watching him is, yeah, he's slowed down a little bit, but he's like almost picking on some of these young pitchers because he knows what they're going to do. He knows where they're going to go. He knows when he can get breaking ball. He knows when he has to cheat to the fastball a little bit, and he just has this knack for turning it up a notch with the runner in scoring position. And it's still there, and obviously he still has a little bit of power. And so perhaps the White Sox on the short term until they get fully healthy again, but no Luis Robert, no Eloy Jimenez, they could probably fit that bat in there somewhere. The question becomes whether or not he wants a platoon. The thing with the Angels, with Ohtani, is that he had to play first base, which I think was asking a lot for him to be out there on his legs all the time. We know all the feet and ankle problems that he's had over the years. It probably wasn't an ideal situation for him to try to finish out that contract. So I think it's a matter of what he wants to do. But if he's okay going and being a part-timer for a contender, I think they could absolutely use him.
Okay, so we're talking to C.J. Nikowski with us here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. C.J., part of the Rangers broadcast crew. He's a TV analyst, MLB Network Radio. The rash of arm injuries, I theorize that, first of all, the start and the stop last year, getting your arm ready in the offseason, coming to camp, then having camp stopped and started and stopped and all that stuff can't be good. But can we also partially attribute some of these arm injuries to pitchers as just chasing speed and chasing spin rate? Like, is that a potential byproduct of chasing spin rate?
It could be. I mean, we know that obviously we talk a lot about the numbers and these guys are throwing harder than ever. I think we've also probably contributed to, the way that they're getting there and when it actually starts, right? I mean, you have young kids, I have some older ones, and what they're doing now is starting so much earlier. And for a lot of these kids, that means throwing more. I think that's probably one of the bigger issues. It's pitch count for kids, and then eventually it does catch up with you. The late bloomers are usually the ones that can avoid some of these injuries. And there's no foolproof way. There's not any one way to do it. You get a guy with bad mechanics that has been pitching since he was 10 and he never gets hurt. And then you get a guy that doesn't seem like he should get hurt. He's got great mechanics, and all of a sudden he blows out. And even if he's a Northeast guy, he's not playing all year round. I think Matt Harvey's probably a good example of somebody like that you're surprised that they got hurt based on their amateur usage. But I do think the amateur usage in the training is something that ultimately catches up to you. But what do you do? I mean, you're not going to not train. You're not going to not throw. And you should be a little bit careful about your innings. And hopefully you have smart coaches that care about you and parents that can get informed. But it's a real challenge to be able to do that. And when is it okay to pick up a heavy ball? When is it okay to start long tossing at, extreme length that all these other kids will be doing? And they're getting the velocity, and it's such a competitive world that it's hard to back off sometimes. So I think a lot of it has to do with probably what they did as amateurs and the younger minor league players trying to get to the big leagues. Mm-hmm. And at some point, for most pitchers, it is going to hit up here.
CJ, you played in New York, and you know what it's like, and you've seen the stars, former teammates come over, get the big deals, and some guys just seamlessly fit right in. Some guys scuffle out of the chute. Hell, I mean, even Tino Martinez, who's beloved by Yankee fans, he was booed after hitting about 140 in April, taking over from Mattingly. We know about A-Rod till he finally cracked through in 2009, and a million other guys, whether it's Baeger with the Mets or even Piazza early with the Mets, heard some boos. The thing about Lindor, right, it's obviously early, and I'm not overly concerned, but I did a real deep dive on some advanced numbers. I know you appreciate this stuff. might be a little cause for alarm. Number one, the way he finished this season a year ago. Okay, but a pandemic year, so I won't put too much into that. But, you know, where he ranks percentile-wise for average exit velo, the percentage of balls he's barreled up, which is in the 12th percentile, the percentage of batted balls that they classify as weak is more than double the league average. What's going on with Lindor?
Yeah, so it's interesting. One, I kind of wish that if I'm running that club that I want to see him in that New York uniform first, right? The personality and who he is and how he carries himself tells you it probably shouldn't be a problem, but you still want to see it. You just never know. Like you went through a couple of those examples of some players that you said would fit right in and then wouldn't be an issue. And so he gets off to what's called a sudden good boost for the first time at home, and he commented on it. Like that had never happened to him before. So that's something new that he's experiencing at the biggest level in one of the biggest markets in sports around the world, right? So he has to now work through that. Then when you're talking about that contract like that and how high it is, you start to wonder a little bit, is he trying to not strike out? Right? Is he taking some shorter swings, maybe not being as aggressive, and so he's putting the ball in play, but not with any drive behind it? I've seen players fall into that trap before where they get so concerned about swings and misses and striking out that the contact rate and the exit velocity are not where you want them to be, at least not the hard contact rate. So that could be part of it as well. You know, with such a deep shortstop class, it was one thing, and it's still obviously too early to say, and I think he'll come out of it as well, but it was such a deep class that there wasn't a lot of pressure, I didn't feel like, on the New York Mets to sign him and give him that deal. There are a lot of good shortstops that are going to be out there. There's going to be good ones that are going to be cheaper, and I like Lindor as much as the next guy, but he can get off to the slow start and take a deep hole for himself in New York. You wonder what this year ultimately will end up looking like, and there's time, but I don't think it's going to be an off-the-charts all-star level, getting MVP votes kind of year. He's just got to bounce back and get comfortable and take that into next year. But I do wonder if the slow start has gotten him a little bit in protection mode and trying not to fail, which obviously is not a recipe for success.
No, you can't hit passively like that. You got to go and jump on. You know, you just got to be confident in the box. You know that as well as anybody. We saw that with Beltran his first year. He was really all out of whack. I think only 16 home runs with the Mets. He bounced back nicely in year two. So just something worth keeping an eye on. CJ, I know you've been juggling today. We wanted to get you on the show. It's been a little bit. Good talking shop, and hopefully the family as well. And we'll get you back on soon. Thank you very much, man.
Sounds good, BT. Great to catch up.
Same as always. CJ Nikowski, Rangers broadcast team, MLB Network radio host, all-around good guy. All right, coming up next, this is wild. I mean, we talk about somebody like Lindor having a rough time in the batter's box or, you know, a pitcher who's just getting knocked around. Imagine being in an individual sport and no teammates to lean on, nowhere to hide. Well, that's golf and a few other individual sports too, but Sam Burns is going to join me next. He's a golfer. He won the Valspar, but let's just say it was not an easy route. That's some tough moments, and we'll talk to him about finally cracking through, you know, what it's like trying to work your way up. I think you guys will really enjoy this. We'll do that coming up next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right, Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio. Tiki is out, but this was a great story a week ago. Matt, it's funny because Tiki would have really enjoyed this. He played down on the Valspar, played with Rondé, played in a Pro-Am, and the Valspar brought us a great human interest story. Number one, we got to see some great golf from many players, but the young man who cracked through got his first PGA win, and he went from all smiles, bouncing up the 18th fairway, to all tears post-round, and understandably, because, man, he was knocking on the door. He had, I think it was at least five or six other times where he was atop the leaderboard after a round. He's obviously got a ton of game, but he was never able to finish, and it's hard. He's only 24, so he's young, but winning, I think we take it for granted because we all watched Tiger just burst on the scene, and Phil won a ton when he was young. Man, it is not easy to learn how to close that door, the final nine on a Sunday, and Sam Burns did it, and he's with me here on Tiki and Tierney. Sam, how you doing today, man? Well, first of all, congratulations. How are you?
Thank you very much. I'm doing well. It's been a fun week at home, just getting to celebrate with friends and family, just really soaking it in, but also exciting to start preparing for next week and kind of the rest of the year.
And the rest of the year changes dramatically for you, pretty much all short of a spot in the U.S. Open, which is going to be amazing for you, and you should make your first trip to the Masters next spring. So when you win, you know, these fruits come your way. Talk about the near misses. I mean, because you can look at it one of two ways, and I'm sure probably you had both. But you look back, you say, man, I was right there, so I know I got plenty of stick to win. That I'm sure you never doubted that. But when you don't close the deal, you have to wonder, boy, what do I need to change? And that's probably a little unsettling for somebody that collegiately and obviously as an amateur had a ton of success. So before you won last week, just describe and take us through that process, which must have been pretty all over the map for you.
Yeah, you know, it's a very interesting thing because when you're around the lead, which like I was for, three or four events and not able to win, you know, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, you know, wow, we were playing a lot of really good golf. Game was in a great place. But then it's almost at the same time, it's like a disappointment because you don't win, but you don't want to lose sight of also that your game's in good form and you're doing a lot of good things. So I think for me, it was almost just like, hey, just let's take a step back. We're doing a lot of quality things. Like, this is not a moment of let's freak out because, you know, my game's not good. It's mm-hmm. like, okay, what do we need to do different in those situations? And that was really cool for me, just trying to learn as much as possible, especially in high-pressure situations, and just trying to figure out what works for me, what doesn't, how I felt, what I could do different. And so I think that was the biggest thing for me this time around is I just felt so much more comfortable. I felt like I don't want to get to come off like I feel like I belong there, but I didn't mm-hmm. feel like, the last few times that I could win out there, I didn't really have the belief. But this time around, I just knew that if I would just, play my game and just stay in the moment one shot at a time, really get into what we were trying to do and be really specific with, the shots we were trying to play, that ultimately that would give us our best chance. And so, just what a sweet blessing it was that it worked out in our favor this time, and it was really cool.
It's amazing to me because, the way it goes, especially for an individual sport, and you're out there, I know you got your caddy, but let's face it, you bring that club back, it's Sam Burns who's striping it or, off the mark. I mean, it is what it is, and you've got to live with it. But to me, like the psyche of a golfer who has yet to win, and what you just said was interesting, you had conviction this time that you would be able to finish even though you hadn't yet won. Versus the other few times, more than a few, where you were right there and you didn't necessarily feel as if you were equipped to win. So before you actually win, how do you believe that you're in a better position to win, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's funny. It's kind of like one of those things where, golf is not like if you're a linebacker and you miss a tackle and the safety gets in behind you. It's you miss the tackle and he's, it's 70 yards to the house and nobody's there to kind of pick him up. So it is interesting in the fact that it is, basically, at the end of the day, it falls on me. But also, like, at the same time, we just had a great team around me, so many people that have helped me to get to this point. And, yeah, it's funny. It's one of those things that it's hard. It doesn't make sense for people to think, how could you have conviction when you haven't done it yet? But mm-hmm. I think it's been so close so many times and just understanding that I always thought that I had to play perfect on the weekend to win, and that's just not the case. Nobody's out there is playing perfect. So just understanding that, like, hey, some things are going to go your way, some aren't. You're going to hit bad shots. Just being able to accept that and move forward and not kind of sit there and dwell on those was really helpful.
I got you. So we're talking to Sam Burns, who is the name you're going to be hearing a lot about over the next coming years, hopefully for a long time. He won at Valspar, first PGA win. That opens up, obviously, Augusta. That opens up the U.S. Open. And Sam is with me here on Tiki and Tierney. Sam, what I always try to do, we have Brandel Chamblee on the show all the time, Justin Leonard, not trying to name drop, but we have a lot of David Duval, a lot of great golf guests. And, Patrick Reed, after he won the Masters, we've had Spieth. We're a show that loves golf and understands golf. But we can't play well, but we get it, and we both love the game. I always try to humanize golf for our audience because, let's face it, 99% of us are going out there shooting 90-something or even sometimes triple digits. I'm always curious, even as a professional, with a finely tuned swing and you can fly at three bills when you have to and you're getting down in two when you're 40 feet away, flop shots, you can do it with your eyes shut, you can move the ball, you can do whatever you want. But as a professional, when you step on a range on a Thursday or even a Wednesday before for a specific event, when you take the first couple of swings, do you ever feel, even as a professional, like out of sorts? Not like we would feel out of sorts on the range where we can be lost, but like, wow, this is not the swing I'm looking for. And when that happens, what do you do?
Yes, 100%. I think that's the unique thing about golf is just every day is a little bit different. Every day your swing just feels a little bit different. Your body may feel a little bit different. And golf, I mean, it only takes, you know, 1 or 2 degrees makes a big difference. And so, I think for me in those situations, it's kind of like, you know, I try not to freak out. I'm just trying to accept it for what it is. Like, hey, my golf swing doesn't feel great today. You know, it's not doing exactly what I want it to, but let's just go out there and give it our best. You know, may not be able to shoot 65 today. Maybe our best today is 72. And so it's just kind of one of those deals that you just, and that's something I've learned over the years. I'm still learning how to do that. And so it's, but definitely there, you know, you have those moments for sure.
Do you think there are guys on tour who you just use the term, you know, you try not to freak out. And if you don't feel like you have a 65 on the first few swings, maybe just grind it out and, you know, get around the course and get your par and call it a day. Do you think there are guys, I would imagine there are, who do inwardly freak out and overanalyze and they make it worse?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, you know, as professional golfers, it's a lot of times it's easy to try to be we probably all have a little bit of perfectionist in us. So yeah, it's in those times it's like, all right, let's damage control here and not make it worse.
I got you. So one of the great things about, you know, hitting the winner's circle is that you're really, and the PGA Tour is incredibly charitable. It's awesome.
Right.
You guys do so much. And with, you know, the Valspar Championship, I know that you've had a chance to link up with Fill the Stadium, which is a great sacrifice for roughly 70,000 children in need. I know we've had a few of the other players talk about this, but specifically for our audience that might not know what is the initiative all about, and what are you doing specifically, Sam?
Yeah, so Fill the Stadium is basically an urgent effort, you know, working alongside Compassion International with the unique goal of meeting immediate needs, mostly for children and their families in crisis through the next 12 months. And I think, you know, a good perspective that kind of makes sense to me is, you know, 70,000 kids is what their goal is to help and their families. And 70,000 is also the average capacity of a pro football stadium. So each seat represents a child in need, and that, you know, our hope is that people would normally spend money to attend a pro sporting event, but, you know, a lot of times right now they can't because of COVID. So we'll just choose to support these at-risk children.
This is a great thing. You know, I know that the McCourty brothers are involved in this. Nate Solder, who's an offensive lineman for the Giants. Nick Foles, quarterback, he won the Super Bowl. The website is www.fillthestadium.com. We'll get a link out. We'll tweet something out for you. Because I get a sense you're going to be around for a long time doing this and getting some wins, and people are going to get to really know you, I want them to learn a little bit more about you, so when they see you on TV, they're like, oh, yeah, I heard Sam on the Tiki and Tierney show the other day. Were you the kind of kid, when you were growing up, Sam, were you playing every sport, or were you just, hey, 7-iron in your hand from the time you were 2 and it was all about golf? What was your athletic starting point?
Yeah, that's a good question. So my dad and brother both actually played college football at Louisiana Tech. So we were always a football family growing up.
Nice.
My brother's 8 years older, so, you know, when he was 13, I was 5, and so all of his friends would, you know, just beat me up and bully me around. And so finally I decided if I picked up a golf club, I could, you know, I could try to get after him with it. And so that's kind of how it started. And mostly as a weapon at first. And then my brother actually kind of got me into it. He showed me how to swing. And then actually what I really got into it was my mom would always take me to a summer camp. And I don't know how old I was, maybe 10 or 11 at the time. You know, she asked me, you know, one day after school, hey, do you want me to sign you up for the summer camp? And I was like, no, not this year. How about you just take me, you know, at the same time you would take me to camp, just take me to the golf course and you pick me up at dark. Take me in the morning at 7, pick me up at 7 that night. And I just had a lot of time out there just trying to figure out, you know, this silly game we play, try to figure out how to get good at it. And, you know, some days I think I've got a hand on it. Some days I'm still searching. So
Yeah, like the rest of us in civilization, that's for sure.
Yeah.
All right, man. So is there anybody that – I'm going to let you go after this, Sam. Sam Burns, of course, Valspar champion a week ago down in Tampa. You've been on tour now for a couple of years. You played a lot of events. Is there anybody that you want to play with that you haven't had a chance to be paired up with yet?
Good question. I would say Webb Simpson is you know, a guy that's kind of a mentor of mine out there. Just a great, great Christian guy, really open, shares his heart with people and makes a difference in a lot of people's lives. And I've gotten to spend a lot of time around Webb, but haven't ever been paired with him in a tournament. So I think that would be, you know, really fun for me, just getting to play with him and kind of learn from him what he does out there, you know, how he goes about it.
Yep, one of the good guys, no doubt. Webb, we've had Webb on. It's been a while, but definitely a good dude, and he's got a lot of game, too. He's been on some Ryder Cup team. Webb could play, no question.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, listen, Sam, go and, you know, it's back to the grind here. That championship's always going to be on the mantle, and you're going to always keep it shiny, I hope. First one, and it's awesome to see it. I watched it. I watched that last day, and it was pretty cool to see the emotion. I think that's great for the sport. Congratulations. Keep doing your thing with fillthestadium.com, and we'll be watching. You can bet that. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Absolutely. No doubt. All right, coming up, we're going to get the blast, but a little late, but it's all good. Axe update, then we'll do the blast, and we'll wrap up a great, busy week here on Tiki and Tierney. Axe turn right now. This is how we do it. All right, wrapping it up. Good week. Great show. Hopefully everybody enjoyed it. If you missed anything, just jump on Twitter. Throw us a follow as well, at Tiki and Tierney, at Brandon Tierney. Instagram, same deal. On both accounts, youtube.com/Tiki and Tierney. Odyssey.com, just type in our names. All the content pops up. Anyway, time to answer our Ask the Pros question of the day today. And it's coming in from Lake Placid. Beautiful. Phil's up there. And Phil wants to know, what's the biggest surprise so far in the early part of the baseball season to me? Boy, there's a bunch. I would narrow it down to these two stories. I'm going to give you one American League one and one National League one. I am very surprised that the Indians have a negative run differential. The Twins. I mean, first of all, yeah, I'm surprised they're 11-19. But if you told me that they're 11-19 and they're only two more wins than the Tigers, who are horrendous, I mean, that's stunning enough. But the fact that they're really not cranking out the runs the way we're accustomed to watching the Twins crank out runs. A couple of years ago, they had, 308 home runs? I mean, they got – and Buxton's been great. They got mashers everywhere. So that's a big surprise to me, number one. Number two, I would say that the Giants are leading the NL West. Very surprised at that. And their run differential, by the way, is plus 30. So the Dodgers, slightly better at plus 37. But even the Padres, think about all the arms the Padres imported, right? In addition to a few decent ones they already had. Think about the bats they brought in. Think about what they have. They have a 16 positive plus 16 run differential. The Giants are plus 30. A little surprising to me. I know I'm getting a little bit in the weeds there with that, but those are things that, rather than just saying, oh, this team's off to, I don't know, those are things that like are more identifiable with what could be problems in both of those spots. All right, well, in Minnesota, not a problem. In San Francisco, obviously. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts, all your car care needs, guaranteed low prices. Excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. I don't know what consequence this will have on the season, because there's a chance they might not even get into the play-in here, but Zion Williamson fractured his left ring finger. He's out indefinitely. They announced that a little bit before, a little bit earlier. He's been pretty durable this year. He's played, it's 61 of the 66 Pelican games. So, you know, listen, you'd love to see him finish up the season without interruption, but it's not like it's, you know, a lower extremity, like a muscle pull or something with the knee. Yeah, you can live with the left ring finger getting banged up a little bit in traffic, but Zion, for the most part, a bit of pillar of health this year, and his numbers are pretty sick, but looks like he's going to miss the rest of the way. All right, let's get to the blast, see what we got.
So many topics, so little time. We give you five stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for the blast with Tiki and Tierney.
is D-Cell.
Here we go, BT.
D-Cell.
Let's start it off with some NFL quarterback talk.
Mm-hmm.
Jared Goff told the media yesterday that he feels the Lions showed faith in him by not drafting a quarterback last week.
I think it's a nice vote of confidence, obviously, for me. And I think what's not lost on me is that their first move is as a staff with Brad and Dan was involved me. So it's exciting and it makes you feel good.
Did you take it as a vote of confidence by the Lions and Goff for why they didn't select the quarterback?
Yeah, a little bit. I like Goff. I don't love Goff. I like Goff more than Tiki does. Tiki's been a little bit more, and you know this, D-Cell, you've heard it, where he thinks it's a little bit more of a rental than I do, a little bit more of a maybe one and done. I'm not saying that Goff is going to go on to play 10 years in Motown, but I think that it's a pretty interesting point. It was the regime's, it was their first big move, number one. And, you know, that's showing some confidence in his talents, but also going out and getting Pede Sewell, who they drafted 7th overall. So it's one thing to go out and get a guy, and then it's, you know, I think it's further, reinforced that you have pretty strong belief that he could be a good player for a long time there by going out and getting somebody who's now responsible to protect his blind side when you could have either traded out or, you know, to Goff's point, taken a quarterback. So, yeah, I think it's a vote of confidence, but in the NFL, you know, quarterbacks, it's a carousel these days. Things are fleeting. Doesn't mean that this can't change, but I actually am a little higher on Goff in Detroit than my man Tiki is, and I think that Goff is right. At least for now, favorable sign.
Speaking of quarterbacks, earlier this week, Vikings general manager Rick Spielman joined our buddy JR Sport Brief right here on CBS Sports Radio.
By the way, such a weird name for a show. JR Sports Brief.
It's actually Sport Brief.
Sport Brief, pardon me.
Correct. Made a huge following for himself.
No, I like him. I've heard him a few times locally when I'm driving around, whether it's going to Little League or going to the golf course. But I've heard him a little bit doing some I heard him a lot over the winter going to do St. John's games. He's doing some stuff on FAN. Not a knock on his talent at all. I like him. You know, every time we have our Zoom meetings, with Chernoff and the rest of the staff here, Damon and everybody. You know, he's a really good guy. I haven't met him in person. I like his personality. I think he's pretty good on social media, too. It's not a name of a show that rolls off the tongue. That's all I'm saying.
I actually know JR from his YouTube days, and JR Sport Brief was the name of the YouTube show, so he carried it over to his radio show.
Well, that makes sense. There you go.
All right, so Rick Spielman joined JR and spoke highly of number 66 pick Kellen Mond.
Mm.
He continued to progress and continued to ascend through this process by how he performed down at the Senior Bowl, and then the Zoom calls that we had with him. And I know even the night before Thursday night after the draft and before Friday started, I went back and watched the whole hour of the Zoom call they had with him just to get to know him not only as a person, but how intelligent he was and how quickly he picked things up that our coaches were installing. So we were very excited to get him where we were able to get him.
So, BT, do you see Kellen Mond evolving into a starting quarterback?
It's funny. I keep referencing Tiki because I like to show the contrast in the show. I like Kellen Mond more than Tiki does. I thought he'd get drafted in this spot. I was talking about that leading up to the draft. I actually put down a little bit of a prop bet that based on where I thought he would get drafted, and I won a few bucks on it. I like Kellen Mond. I do. You know, 6'3", 212, 215, good frame, good body, good mind. And I'm with Spielman to an extent because, you know, I obviously like Mond, but, you know, he did throw 18 picks between his sophomore and his junior season. And that's a lot. I mean, that's a lot in college. I don't love seeing that, you know. And you want to tell me maybe guys weren't always open. You want to tell me protection wasn't great. I'm sure there's reasons for it. This year he dropped that number down to 3, but he only played 10 games, so 3 fewer games than the previous two seasons when he played 13 apiece and had those 9 interception seasons. I like him. I don't love him, but I really don't really like I don't Kirk Cousins. That sounds so personal. Just not a believer in Kirk Cousins, so I believe Kellen Mond's going to get on the field a little bit quicker than people think.
All right, BT, let's get to some NBA here. While the Bulls have struggled since acquiring Nikola Vucevic at the trade deadline, Vooch and Zach LaVine were both in the lineup last night as the Bulls blew out the Hornets 120-99.
Saw that.
And I know me and you agreed on this at the trade deadline when it happened, but what are your expectations for the Bulls next season after seeing them struggle since adding Vooch?
By the way, did you see some highlights from that game? Did you see the dunk that Tice threw down?
I did.
Whoa!
I did,
that was vicious, man. You know, listen, I love both of these players. Well, I like Vucevic. I love LaVine. I'm a huge LaVine fan. I think he's going to be, I mean, he's already been around for a little bit here, but I think he's entering his prime because he's become a really good shooter. We all know he could just get by you and elevate over you. I like him. What's my expectations next season? Very high, much higher than most people. I want to see what else they do. I mean, if it's just Vooch and LaVine without any upgrades, you know, they're going to need to do something with a few of the other spots on the roster that's a little dead wood-ish. But if they have one decent upgrade, I don't mean a superstar, but one decent upgrade, Kobe White's got to get his act together too. And they're going to have to probably trade Markkanen. So they have some tough decisions in front of them. I think that the Bulls, now keep in mind, Knicks are getting better. Nets will be good next year. Celtics will be good. Philly will be good. Atlanta's going to be good. Pacers should be competitive. The Eastern Conference is getting better. I believe that they will vie for a 7 or an 8 spot. And it'll be relatively easily within their reach. I like the Bulls. I do. I think they could be pretty decent next year.
Blue Jays' $150 million free agent signing George Springer has only played in 4 games this season due to a pesky right quad strain. I know you mentioned this a little earlier.
I did.
And Springer is not expected back in the lineup anytime soon. Is Springer's nagging injury an example of why small market franchises don't normally make big free agent signings?
Well, I don't think this is a particularly big free agent signing. He's 31 this year, so his 2021 age season is 31. And he didn't sign a 10-year deal or a 13-year deal like Bryce Harper. He signed through 2026, so he'll be 36. So, you know, he signed a 6-year deal, which is something the Mets, I think, really wanted to get it done at 5. But, you know, it's not a 7, 8, 9, 10, 12, 13-year deal. I think it's manageable. You know, the question is, will it adjust the money? And I don't even think that that's overly exorbitant because you get to the back end, it goes up next year to $29 million. But then for the next 4 years, it's 24, 24, 24, 24. Now, is George Springer an all-star, like a perennial all-star? I don't think he's that. I don't think he's, you know, well, I shouldn't say that. I like him. I do like him. He's not a star. And he's not paid. Well, he's paid like a star. And he's not a superstar. But he's not paid like a superstar. I don't think it will be as prohibitive or as punitive as maybe some others think. Have a great weekend. Safe, sensible, sane. Enjoy it. Catch you Monday. Be well, everybody.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.